Hey everyone, this is Ben Morton and thank you for joining me for episode 20 of the podcast and my interview with Andrew Southcott, who is the Managing Director at Captivate Group. Captivate Group is a multi-award winning collection of creative agencies providing connected thinking across social, design, PR, influencer, experiential and in-store retail. With a background at big networked agencies, Andrew has been with the independent business for 6 years now, progressing from employee to shareholder and finally to managing director. This episode came about after I stumbled upon a LinkedIn post that Andrew wrote summarizing his first 90 days in post as the managing director. So this episode really is a first-hand, extremely current conversation about what it's like to step into the MD role. In our conversation, we touch on his thoughts and feelings about the new role, along with what he practically did in those first few days and his reflections several months in. But just before we get to the interview, let me take 2 minutes of your time to quickly share some exciting news that I've got for you in that we've just launched a brand new online program. The Personal Leadership Mastery Program is designed to help leaders and managers to really play at their best, both in and out of work, in a fast-paced, rapidly changing world. All of the details about the program are in the show notes, along with an exclusive 30% discount code for fans of the podcast. But that's enough about that for now. So without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Andrew Southcott. Hello, Andrew. Welcome and thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today. How are you doing? Whereabouts in the world are we talking to you?
Hi, and thank you very much for having me on your show. I'm currently calling you from East London and I am just sat in the spare room. The sun is shining. We're recording this at a time when life's actually looking pretty good. We've just had the Biden election come through and they've announced yesterday that there is a potential vaccine. So after some quite tricky couple of months, I actually feel that I'm in a really pretty positive place at the moment.
Yeah, likewise. I think there's amongst all the challenges, there's definite cause for optimism and hope in the world, right?
Absolutely.
So, Andrew, just for context for everybody listening and listeners in the show, of the show will already know what my first question is, but can you just give us a bit of an overview of who you are, the current role that you're doing now, and a little bit of the career journey that got you to where you are, please?
Sure thing. So I always find the origin story kind of a weird bit on these things, and similarly in any autobiographies. I always kind of skip through those bits. But so I won't go too far back. I guess my career really kicked off a company called Blinkhorns, which was an accountancy practice that focused very much on film stars, TV stars, and all the productions that went into this. But the interesting thing about that role was the building was actually located next to another company called Freud Communications. Freud Communications is one of the larger PR agencies in the UK. And it was very much a case of you can't be what you can't see. And I didn't really know that this whole industry existed until I came into contact with it. And I would look at what those guys were doing, and they all looked really happy in what they were doing. You go onto their website, you see the work they're doing. I thought, do you know what? I really want to go and work in that industry. So that really set me off to try and find out how do I go about accessing it. After a little while, I made my way into Burson Marsteller, which is one of the really big PR agencies. And it's got offices across the world. And I got there, I probably did 3 years there, and I absolutely love my time there. And it's in my current position of MD of Captivate Group, it's one of the roles I really want to look back on. Because when I look back on it, I think there was a fantastic MD there. There was a fantastic FD in there. The staff at that agency went on to be involved with companies like The Romans, Eulogy, Ogilvy, Portland, Edelman. They also went to in-house roles like Facebook, Ford, Bloomberg, and the worldwide the wrestling organization. And so the interesting thing for me was the people that we had in that organization at that time were really, really talented individuals. But that agency it didn't really quite kick on over the couple of years I was there. So it's a period of time that I want to look back on and go, do you know what, talent alone is not enough. And so I think that's feeding into some of the thoughts I'm going to come on to later. After working at Burton Mostella, I'd move on to Weber Shandwick, which was another international PR agency. And I didn't really enjoy my time there. And after a year, I moved on. And I was thinking, I've done a couple of the really big networked agencies. What do I want to do next? And what I wanted to do was go and work at an independent agency. So I moved to Captivate Group. Captivate Group is a collection of six individual agencies. We cover disciplines including design, PR, influencer, events, and retail production. And I've been there now for 5-6 years. I worked through the finance director to operations officer, and now I'm sitting as the MD of the organization.
Wow, that's great. It's a fascinating journey. And I think being totally transparent with everybody listening, we ended up recording this episode because I was doing some hashtag research on LinkedIn and searching under hashtag MD, which led me to a post you wrote, I think only a few months back, perhaps, around your first 100 days in role as the MD at Captivate Group, which we'll share the link to that post in the show notes for anybody who wants to take a read. So I'm fascinated just really to dig into and explore that journey and some of the points you discussed in that post. So with that in mind, can you talk to us a little bit, Andrew, about what you did in that period between finding out you had the MD role and then sitting in the chair, so to speak, on that very first day? Like, what did you do to prepare? Did you sort of create a formal 100-day plan, as is often described in books like The First 90 Days, but I think it's a Michael Watkins book? Like, what was that preparation like for you?
So the transition happened very, very quickly. So there wasn't a moment where I sat down and went, okay, I know this is coming, therefore I'm going to do a big plan. But I had been within the organization for 5-6 years. I think everyone that sort of sits in a number two role probably in the back of their mind goes, ah, if I had the top job, this is what I would do differently. And so I do think I was probably prepared for it, even though I wasn't properly prepared for it. We'd also done a fairly robust procedure about a year earlier where we had done a management buyout of WPP. So we had WPP as a minority investor in the organization. And then about a year ago, we bought it out. And as part of that process, we really worked out a bit of a plan for as soon as that transaction had been completed, what we would go on to do. So I didn't have a sit down moment between finding out about the role and then sitting in the role, but I did have sort of background research and plans of what I wanted to do. The key difference, I guess, that I have seen from moving from the number two position to the MD position is you really have got to live with the repercussions of your decisions. A lot of the time leading up to it, you would sort of say things like, oh, I think we should do this. But it's not you that's going to have to execute what you're suggesting. A very base one, we are right in the middle of the pandemic, or hopefully coming through towards the end. The world of work is changing, and do you need an office anymore? When I was the number two, I was going, do you know what? Let's get rid of the office. Let's downsize. There'll be a financial saving for doing it. Actually, now as the MD of the group, I've signed the lease again to extend it, because you start to look at the problems more holistically. So you go, yes, we could do that, but the repercussions would be to do this, that, and the other. So actually, I moved from thinking in one way to thinking in very much a different way. And I would say that way is a more holistic way.
And do you have any particular structure or frameworks that you now put around that decision-making now? Part of the reason for asking that question is I looked at some research recently around why sort of Fortune 500 CEOs tend to fail or leave a business. And it's very rarely because they made a wrong decision. It's nearly always because they failed to make a timely decision. So I'm just wondering, like, how does that actually work for you kind of now, making decisions?
I've definitely worked out that I think a bias for action is very important. This comes about really from the idea that very few decisions are irreversible. So I definitely try to go about doing things and then seeing if they work and then iterating them. It could be that you try something and then you stop it, or you could be that you try something and you double down on it. But I think having a bias for action is incredibly important. My slight worry is a plan without action is just a dream, is a catchphrase that I've picked up from somewhere. And so I think just try to do something and then move from that position rather than finding yourself in analysis paralysis. I suspect you're going to regret more the things that you didn't do than the things that you did do. Feeding off the back of that is to focus on the things that you can affect. So if you look at the last couple of days, there's just so many things that move, but we can't control what the government guidance is going to be on accessing offices. We can't control when a vaccine will appear. So although there is a lot of movement in the more macro conditions, I think what's really important is to go, okay, what are the options that are available to us? And what do we think is the best decision that we can make with the options available to us? The bit off of that is to make sure that you're not making these decisions alone. And I can't advocate enough for the idea of decentralized control. So it's not me that really runs the business. It is me plus the MD of the influencer agency, the MD of the branding agency, the MD of the experiential agency, and all the other guys. So we're trying to create a team of senior management that then make the decisions together. We'll come onto it in a little bit, but one of the values I think is useful is to have disagree and commit. So try and not focus excessively on social cohesion of that group, but really try and bash those ideas together to try and come up with what you as a group think is the best idea, and then for all of you to get behind that idea, even if it's not yours. This becomes a lot easier to do, provided you've hired great people. And that for me has been kind of the key driver of what I've done over the last 100 days. I have made sure that whenever we're hiring someone, I'm involved in one of the latter stage interviews. And I think that is the way that I would suggest anyone should go forward to making decisions.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I just want to highlight that phrase you use, because it's one I think is so powerful. You said just then, disagree and commit. I first heard that myself many years ago in relation to Hewlett-Packard. I think it was, rumor has it, it was a phrase and a mantra that they lived by. But I think it's so powerful, isn't it? Engage in healthy debate where kind of everything is fully explored, all angles are considered, and get to the point where as a team you're able to reach consensus on the way forward and fully commit, regardless of whether or not it's the position that you came into that meeting advocating. I think if you can get a team to that position, I think it's such a formula for success.
Yeah, it's certainly not one of my phrases. It's one of the Amazon leadership principles. And I would highly recommend anybody that's moving into a MD position or a senior position goes and finds that set of principles. I don't know who wrote them, but they are fantastic. A few that I can think of off the top of my head is they talk about customer obsession. They are big believers in inventing and simplifying, and then be right a lot is another one of theirs. And I think actually they might have somewhere in there the idea of bias for action paired with frugality. And I think that by having those two things together, if you run an idea without spending a huge amount on it, you can then continue to push through. The problem is if you spend a huge amount trying to do something, you'll have vested interest where you won't be able to let go of that idea and not be able to move forward. But I would hugely recommend that you to anyone moving into those positions to get that. The other really useful tool is there's a Netflix deck somewhere on the internet which talks about how you build culture, and that's another hugely useful resource. There's a SlideShare deck on that, and I would recommend anyone read that.
Fantastic. You mentioned earlier about how no decision is particularly irreversible. Just wondering, are there any decisions you've made so far that on hindsight weren't quite the right decision, or you perhaps regret? And if so, what have you done about them?
The only irreversible decisions that we have within the organization are decisions about people. So we have had to lose some people during this year. We've had to lose some of those people, particularly in the experiential arm of the business. There were really good people that through no fault of their own have lost jobs. Ultimately, in order to maintain the business, we had to make those decisions. So I think they were probably still the right decisions, but they were certainly not decisions that I wanted to take.
Yeah, that makes sense. And circling back again slightly to your first day in the MD seat, so to speak, I'm curious, how did it feel literally when you stepped into that role? What were some of the emotions going on? And sort of what was the first day, first week like? Just talk us through that journey, because that's something that people aspiring to MD and CE roles, I'm sure, will be curious about.
So being MD is brilliant. It's something that a lot of people work towards for a long period of time, and getting there feels like an achievement. The problem is, of course, that is just day one, and so then you've actually got to start doing the role. The interesting thing for me is I actually had become an owner of the business a little while previously, and I think there is something about owning your business or part owning your business that is also really important. There's nothing wrong with being an employee, but being an owner brings its own set of challenges. I just think you really care that little bit more when it's your business and your name above the door. You also really, really care when you've had to borrow a large chunk of money to facilitate the buyout. So you are really invested in the success of the business. And I think there's an interesting one going on in the marketing world at the moment. You've got WPP, which is headed up by a guy called Mark Reed, and then you've got the former MD of WPP, a guy called Sir Martin Sorrell, who set up his own business called S4 Capital. S4 Capital are absolutely gunning for WPP at the moment. Their share cap's gone from 0 to 2.5 billion in the same time as WPP's gone from 16 billion down to about 9. And I think there is something about organizations which are headed up by people that have got a substantial stake in the success of the business. With regards to the actual role itself, I think it's hard to get into that role and not have an element of imposter syndrome. Now, I actually wasn't hugely sure that imposter syndrome was really a thing. However, I've now experienced in it, and I can definitely say for me, I've pivoted in my view of that. I think it's kind of hard to not look at an org chart and see all of the people that you are in part responsible for and for their ability to pay their mortgages and to pay their rent and not think, oh God, what am I going to do here? But the longer you do it, I think the more you settle down into it. And again, you've got to focus on the things that you can control. And again, I just think if you try and look at being an MD as an isolated position, you're probably not going to do that well. There's something in the way that a Jose Mourinho, for example, will try and create a siege mentality around the organization. And so rather than having any internal fractions, what you do, you say, we are one holistic unit and we are going to go and tackle your competitors down the road rather than try and have any argy-bargy internally. So I think probably the job of MD, it's much higher on the empathy scale than I probably had expected. I think you asked, what did I do within the first 100 days? I actually did a lot.
Yeah, how did it feel?
I definitely worried, but I don't know if I worried because of the macro conditions, or I don't know if I worried that I wouldn't know what I was doing. It also took me a little while to understand that I am not the person that's going to come in and be the best advisor on design and branding. I've got an MD of my design and branding agency. I've got co-MDs in there that have got combined experience of 80 years. Even if I spent a lifetime trying to learn how to do that, I would never be as good as those guys. And that would only really help me on Monday, because then on Tuesday, I need to go and talk to the social agency. And the MD of the social agency is going to have 10, 15 years of experience. And so I think you've got to accept that you cannot know everything. And you've got to get great people, and then, to use a military term, I think give them tight targeting but loose control. Basically, try and work with you guys to get an estimate of where it is that you want to go, then just get out their way. a lot of the time, management will probably do more harm than good. They are closer to the ground. They've got the experience. Just empower them and get out of their way. And I think once I came to that conclusion, I actually felt a lot less worried.
Yeah, that's great. And did you have a particular outlet or person that you went to or people that you went to help you manage and get comfortable with that imposter syndrome and worry? And thank you for your honesty around that. Again, that will be really helpful for people listening. But what was your release mechanism for that and getting comfortable with that?
I think it's probably the question, so what do you think we should do? So as soon as you get through from that moment of you're not a dictator, you are a builder of a community. And I think as soon as I switched for that moment, I stopped worrying a little bit about it. I'm actually much more worried talking to you on this than I am talking to my MDs, because you've built a safe space there where you can go, cool, we've got a few options here. What are we going to do? As where I have never had media training. So am I going to say something here that is wrong? I just think that this is a new skill set that I'm learning, and I'm learning it in front of an audience. And normally you would try and learn things not in front of a whole bunch of people. So that's probably how I overcame it.
Yeah, you're doing a great job, Andrew. Don't worry. And just looping back again to that LinkedIn article that you wrote around your first 100 days, based on that and your experience to date, what are sort of the one or two key bits of advice that you would offer up to somebody stepping into that MD role? What should they do or be thinking about in the first few weeks?
Probably would just end up repeating a few of the points I've made before. I believe you've got to try and decentralize the decision making, create a team of many, not of a few. So we've built a cross-agency MD team that kind of already existed, but we've now really developed it. I'm now moving on to the client services directors, which is the number two positions within the agencies, and we're building out a little group in there. The idea being that if you've just got one MD, that's only one person. But if you've then got all the MDs of the individual agencies, you've got a leadership team of eight. If you then build out all the CSDs that are in there, you've now got a leadership team of 24 people. And 24, the brain power of 24 is so much more stronger than the brain power of one. The only flip to it would be, of course, is that there's a saying somewhere that if you want to move fast, move small. And so you can't necessarily always bring everyone into every decision making. Ultimately, you've got to go, I've absorbed all the information from everyone, and this is the direction that we're going in, and then everyone follow. So that's probably how I'd go about that. And then, yeah, again, it would be the repetition of the bias for action point is 100 days, I think, probably has come from 100 days gives you enough time to do something of some real substance. But 100 days is also a short enough time period that you've got to have actually affected something. And yeah, you just want to try and avoid getting analysis paralysis. The MD job is so broad and so wide that you could end up not achieving an awful lot. So a real bias for action is what I would advise.
Great. And are there any particular leadership models, frameworks, principles that you rely on as a leader?
So again, I would strongly urge anyone to check out the Amazon Leadership Principles. I just don't think you'll go too far wrong with doing them. But the other one is I truly believe in the power of positivity. I think you can probably break down the world into radiators and drains. It's an oversimplistic point, but I think you can. And I believe it is your job as the senior management within an organization to get as many radiators in there as is humanly possible. If you surround yourself with five positive people, I suspect you'll have a positive day. If you surround yourself with negative people, you'll have a negative day. There is nothing more draining than working with negative people. So I just think you've got to look at your team and go, right, have we got a bunch of positive people here? Because that mental attitude will get you through some pretty tough days. And there have been pretty tough days recently. Everyone will do all right in good times. I think you really find out how good your culture of the organization is in the most recent times. And that was part of the reason, actually, why we pushed so much to try and get some form of people back into the office. We were back in probably August for a little bit. Then we had to come back out, and then we went back in November. Our people are our power, and we need them to know each other and care about each other. And ideas come around better when you have creative collisions. And so we talked about there being a culture bank within an agency. And the reason why we were able to do so well back in March, April, May was we had strong cultures in the agency. Now, over time, those would dissipate. So you need to get your guys back. You can try and do a few of the Zoom activities, and there are a couple of bits and bobs that you can do. But ultimately, nothing will really beat face-to-face contact time. So that's why we tried to get those guys back. That's how I'd go about attacking that.
Yeah, that's great. I was just smiling as you were talking about the energizers and radiators. Literally just this morning, I've been in my studio filming a video on that very, very topic, and was talking about energizers and radiators versus the drains, or the mood hoovers and the drama llamas, as I like to call them. So couldn't agree more, Andrew.
Yeah, so for us, the work that we do is incredibly important, and that is a large driver of why people choose to work with us. But as a leadership team, we also think that for brand managers, coming in to meet their agency should be the best part of their month. And so you can't do that unless you've got the right type of people within the organization. Competency is hugely important, and that should not be underestimated, but you also need to bolt that on with how do they make you feel.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. Andrew, I'm very conscious of time, so we're going to move on to a few slightly quicker fire questions, if that's okay. The first one of those is, what are the one or two books that have really had a significant impact upon you?
Anyone moving into a role like mine should buy Agencynomics by Spencer Gallagher, and you can thank me later. That book is fantastic for how to go about running a consultancy. There's other ones. So Ogilvy on Advertising is an old book, but it's still very relevant today. Blah, Blah, Blah by a guy called Dave Wongidi is a more modern version of that book. Alchemy by Rory Sutherland is also really interesting. But the interesting thing I think about this question, and I was preparing my notes on this last night, is I was actually asked it about 6 months ago. And I recognized when I gave those names, they were all white male authors. And I think as an MD and as anyone, I think you have got a responsibility to try and read from a broader portfolio of authors. And so I've made a conscious decision recently to try and read Black and British, A Forgotten History by Dave Olusoga. I follow a guy called Marvin Harrison, who runs a company called Dope Black Dad and Dope Black Mum. And he actually posted on LinkedIn a little while ago a comment that goes, I know a bunch of you will work for companies that have spent more on Halloween than on Black History Month. And that really resonated with me. So I think whenever anyone recommends a bunch of authors to read, you've got to try and make sure that you're getting some variety of viewpoint in what you're reading. Otherwise, you just end up in an echo chamber.
Yeah, I think that's such a strong point, Andrew. I remember it's probably about 2 years ago, maybe slightly longer. A lady on one of my leadership programs come up to me towards the end of the first day and said, fantastic program, Ben, really enjoying it, but I've got a bone to pick with you. And it was kind of friendly, but slightly pointed. And I was immediately on the back foot, and I was like, okay, what is it? She said, every book in the reading list in the back of your course manual is written by a white man. And it really, really struck a chord with me. I think part of that is it's a fact that there are a lot more leadership books that are written by men. It's probably more personal development books are written by men than women. But since that moment, I've really made a point, intentional point myself, to diversify kind of what I read. It's a really great point. Thank you for raising it.
And also, I mean, it's where do you get your content from? Yes, books is a source of it, but also there are some great talks where you can get exposed to some things. So I went to a talk by Cindy Gallup, who refers to herself as the Michael Bay of business. And if anyone gets the opportunity to go and see her speak about her advertising career, I couldn't recommend it highly enough.
Great. And what are you reading about, learning about, curious about at the moment?
Right. So I was preparing for this answer. And I was like, do you know what? I'm not sure how this is going to play. But the area where I'm looking at a little bit is I'm playing on TikTok quite a lot. And the interesting thing about TikTok is I know there's a lot of perceptions about it, but I was on there earlier today and I looked at it and Balmain have piled their advertising spend into there. Red Bull are spending some serious money in there. Burberry were a very early adopter on it. Part of our organization's role is to find out where attention will be next. TikTok is not a new platform because it's been rolling around for a couple of years now. I think it's been around about 3 years. But we have to know where are the audiences looking, and although the platform isn't necessarily designed for people like me, I think it's important to play with those tools. And actually, once you play with it and once you get the algorithm working, I'm getting some really good content on engineering and aviation and architecture. So that's kind of where my time is spent at the moment. But I am aware that there's definitely some preconceptions about what that platform is and what it does. But there's definitely a marketing opportunity for brands on that platform.
I think that's really cool. And it links to your last comment, right, about the books you read and where you get your ideas and content from. If you go to the same places that fit with you and kind of what you believe in and what you normally do, you're operating in that echo chamber that you mentioned. So I think that's brilliant. And what is, as an MD, as a senior leader, what's keeping you up at the night at the moment, Andrew? And if there isn't anything that you are literally losing sleep over, what's occupying a lot of your thinking time?
So part of my role is, we talk about Captivate being the home of the connected journey. Broadly, wherever a brand meets a consumer, we want to be in the middle of that connection point, facilitating it. So I have to go out and try and spot where those connection points are and then try and find someone that can do it, because we try and set up a new business every couple of years. So we really should have been launching a new business to market this year, but everything got kicked back. So I spend a lot of my time meeting and talking to people. So we're speaking to someone at the moment about, do we open up in New York? We're speaking to someone about, do we open up an AI agency? There's a couple of different people that you speak to about setting up something new. And that goes back to that would be a roughly irreversible decision, or it wouldn't be irreversible, but it would be choosing which one to progress, because there are finite resources and we can't progress everything. There's finite cash resource, but there's also finite thinking power. And setting up a new agency is so hard. It's so hard. And I suspect people that work at big established organizations will never quite understand that until they lived it. There's huge benefits to it, because it's incredibly satisfying seeing something that you've created grow, or something that you've co-created and worked with to grow, because you never achieve anything on your own. It's always part of a team. But that's the one I've got a bit of my worry at the moment. I've got a couple of options. Which one do I choose? Where do I push my chips? That's what keeps me up. I don't worry too much about the wider macro conditions, because I cannot control them. And I think you should not worry about what you cannot affect.
Yeah, great advice. Final question. This should be the easiest one of the lot, Andrew. Where and how can people get in touch with you and find out more about Captivate?
So you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn. I'll be in the comments somewhere on what Ben puts this out with, or you can just email me directly. So my email is andrew.southcott@captivate-group.com.
Amazing. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been a real pleasure having you come on and talk to us. I've been scribbling down notes frantically as you've been talking, so I'm sure there's going to be a load in there that future MDs and CEOs will draw value from. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me, and good luck to everyone taking on a role like this.
My interview with Andrew Southcott of Captivate Group. I hope you found the episode as insightful as I did, and that it provides you with the help and guidance that you need on your own leadership journey. Personally, I really loved the authenticity and honesty that Andrew brought to the conversation. And do remember, if you ever feel as though you're struggling to keep your head above water and stay focused and wrestling with the demands of the fast-paced, complex world within which we all find ourselves living, leading and working, then do check out the link to my brand new Personal Leadership Mastery course, which really is designed to be the antidote to a VUCA world, if you've ever heard that acronym. And do also make sure you take advantage of that 30% discount code that I've given you. And finally, if you're enjoying the show, then please do rate, review and subscribe via iTunes and share it widely across your social media with friends and work colleagues, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more episodes of the show. That's it for episode 20. Take care, and I'll speak to you all again in the next episode. See you soon.